Christmas couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's special Christmas episode for the whole Christmas weekend, we've got some new movies to talk about, including The News of the World, Promising Young Woman, Soul, Wonder Woman 1984, and The Midnight Sky. I'm also going to be talking about some news and the trailer park and the home cinema roundup, featuring a last-minute suggestion of what movies you want to watch on Christmas weekend and where to watch them from the comfort of your own home. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Well, I'm not going to really cover any news this week because I want to reflect. You know, a lot of people do the end of the year to reflect. And yeah, we got New Year's coming up, but then we got all this stuff with like best of the year, worst of the year, and we're going to be looking ahead. Because it's Christmas, I want to talk about the ups and downs of this year. And it's been a tough year. I mean, it really has. The pandemic has shut down businesses, some of them permanently. People have lost their jobs. People have lost their lives. People have lost their homes. And it is a time where people are just trying to make sure that they're on their feet with their families as best they can. And if they can give, they can give. And that's great. But there are some positive things that have happened. And you know, obviously, this is a movie show. So I want to talk about some of the things about movies. And yeah, theaters are suffering. But there's a light at the end of the tunnel. There are some places that they're open. You can go to the theaters, but even the ones that are open are at like 20% capacity, half capacity. And they're suffering because they don't have the big releases in the theaters. But we got vaccinations starting. We got things rolling along. And now I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But throughout 2020, we have seen some great things happen, at least for the consumer. Streaming has blown up. In a good way. I mean, you had Netflix, which was always just sort of like the default one. And you got Amazon and you got Hulu. Those are the three big ones. Disney Plus has expanded its slate, but it also has a lot of great stuff on there. But there's also some smaller ones like Tubi and Pluto that people are discovering. It has some great elements. You know, these old vintage shows. Pluto has whole TV channels devoted to everything from Three's Company to Unsolved Mysteries. Tubi TV has a bunch of obscure stuff. And then you had the launch of Peacock for NBC and Universal's content. You have HBO Max that has launched and has shorn up its subscription base. Quibi, for a hot minute, was out there. And, you know, or Quibi. I guess it was called Quibi. I always call it Quibi. But Quibi was so committed to short content that they had the shortest life of any streaming service. But we still got to see some big movies in the theater, some of them, if you wanted to or if you could. Tenet was out there for a long time out there, exclusively in theaters. Mulan was available on Disney Plus. Bill and Ted 3 was on streaming and in theaters. And Greyhound went to Apple TV Plus. So while we have not seen the number of blockbusters that we normally see in a year, and it is weird going into the end of the year with like Bad Boys for Life being the highest grossing movie of 2020, there was still stuff out there for consumers to watch and take their mind off of things. And also, Warner Brothers and Disney are embracing streaming along with theatrical. And I'm pointing that out. And while it's sort of cheesed off the theaters, what Warner Brothers is doing, they're still saying we're putting stuff in theaters. They're just giving the option for home viewing. And I think that that's where the industry was going anyways. And we would have gotten there in 20 or 30 years, but I think the pandemic accelerated it. But Disney also, in all the slate of stuff that they announced, you know, the huge Marvel news and the huge Star Wars news, they also announced a whole bunch of theatrical dates, which is good because they're looking ahead to 2022, 2023, having theaters being open and still being able to exhibit stuff. And for those who want to stay home or need to stay home, these are revolutionary options from Warner Brothers and Disney. But don't worry, theaters, they're not going to change, and any business does, but they will always be here. And they might not be here in the 30-screen multiplex model that's been popular for 30 years. It might go back to that 4-screen niche theater, which shows just big movies. Who knows? Now, one of the other things is I've been fortunate enough that my family is safe and healthy, and I can still bring at least an hour of escape to everybody here in Radioland each week. But there's been some tough times here, and I got hit personally myself. I lost my father this summer. He died back in July. And I had to take my dog in for her final vet visit in the fall. So that was a 1-2 sucker punch of a summer. But you got to take the good with the bad. So people, stay strong, stay safe, stay focused, and carry on. Merry Christmas to all, and each their own. Celebrate with those around you and those who you love. And let's look ahead to some great times in 2021. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I'm not going to play new trailers because, again, this is the last Fat Guys at the Movies episode to come out in 2020. Because our next episode is going to be dropping on New Year's Day. And that'll be 2021. And so what I want to do is I want to talk about my most anticipated movies that were going to be in 2020 that are now in 2021. And I'm going to play two trailers for them. I mean, you've heard them before if you've listened to the whole program many times in the past. But let's just revisit them and look at what's coming up. No Time to Die. That's one that I've been itching to see for almost an entire year. And that comes out in theaters on April 2nd.
Fate draws us back together. Now your enemy is my enemy.
His name is Seffin.
And what does he want?
Revenge. Me.
When her secret finds its way out, there'll be the death of you.
You can imagine why I've come back to play.
That's, of course, the most recent trailer they did, and that was several months ago that came out. And that was supposed to come out about a month ago, but it didn't, and they moved it to 2021. And I think, you know, if the vaccinations work and everything moves as expected, we should be able to go back to theaters in some major capacity by April, which would be great. I've been rewatching all the Bond films. I got a year or two ago for Christmas the whole box set. And I am now on the Daniel Craig Bond movies. So I have enough time to finish Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, Skyfall, and Spectre before No Time to Die comes out in April. Now, the second one that I was waiting to see in 2020 that got moved to 2021 is, of all things, Candyman, which is coming to theaters in August on the 27th.
I feel really connected to this neighborhood. Cabrini Green. It was the projects.
I just moved in, around the corner.
The old candy factory.
I'm an artist.
You look up a Candyman. He's the monster that's part of this neighborhood.
Why are you drawn to this?
I'm hoping to spread the story all about Candyman.
You should say his name.
Candyman.
Don't say that.
I'm a soft fan of the original. I think the original, the sequels are kind of crap. They're rubbish. But the original Candyman from, 1992... which is based on a Clive Barker story, strangely holds up. There are some movies that you see in the context of the day. And I remember seeing this in the 90s. I remember seeing it actually early. I got an early screening for it because I worked in this film group in college. And we got an early screening of Candyman back in 1992. And I thought it was okay. It didn't blow me away. But I have since watched it a couple times in the last 10 years. And that thing holds up. It really does hold up. And what seemed a little bit awkward back in the 90s has shorn up and held together better now. And I think it's a better movie now looking back than it was when it came out. It just sort of kind of fell under the radar. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with this new one. You know, it's something that obviously could be updated, and it looks like it's going to not just be a remake, but sort of like a continuation as well. I'm very much looking forward to it. And that's my second most anticipated film of 2021. Now, there's a bunch of other ones that were supposed to come out this past year that got moved, including A Quiet Place 2, Black Widow, Dune, Halloween Kills, The Conjuring 3, Godzilla vs. Kong. All of those I'm definitely looking forward to. So I think we're going to have one heck of a year for 2021 when things finally get ramped up in the theaters, sort of get back in line and everybody can go back to release dates and we get a little bit of normalcy back in the world. We just got to hold our breath and be careful and be safe until then. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Wonder Woman 1984 and News of the World.
Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman. All the world's waiting.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's start off with some movie reviews. Well, first one, actually, not a movie review. It's actually just a little talk a little bit about it, and that's Wonder Woman 1984. Diana returns to help save the world in the mid-1980s from a super-powered villain.
Welcome to the future. Life is good, but it can be better. And why shouldn't it be? All you need is to want it. Think about finally having everything you always wanted.
I can save today, but you can save the world.
Steve.
Confession to make, I have not seen this whole movie yet. I have just seen that first scene, which was made available on YouTube. And it looks, it's kick butt. You know, I mean, it goes back to the original Wonder Woman from 2017, where you've got all the warrior women and they're doing some sort of Olympic type event. And little Diana as the little, it looks like it's the same girl. I don't know if it is, but it looked like the same girl who played her in the first movie. Obviously she's 3 years older. So she's, you know, she's grown up a little bit. And the opening sequence looks like, I mean, Patty Mullen saying, hey, we're going to do what worked in the first movie. And that's great. Now, due to a scheduling kerfuffle, I have not had a chance to see Wonder Woman 1984 yet. I will be enjoying it with my family on HBO Max, which you can watch on the Roku now, as we talked about last week. And that's wonderful as well. That, I think, was critical to HBO following through with its business plan. Because I remember saying when they announced they're going to release all their movies on HBO Max next year, I'm like, they better get that Roku thing figured out, because that's something like 100 million users have a Roku player. And as long as you can watch it, because I've heard that even if you buy it through either Hulu or Amazon, the HBO Max subscription, there's certain content blockage going on. So just put the app on there and now it's available. Now everybody can watch it. And that was critical for them to do before Wonder Woman even came out. But this is kind of in a precarious position, because people are going to be looking to see how much money it makes in theaters. I mean, it's going to do well for Warner Brothers. I think Warner Brothers is using it as people to seed their service. They want to bump up the subscribers, and that's why they've got like a 20% off if you buy 6 months in advance deal right now. But they're looking to make some money on this, and not just with subscription service, but people are going to look and see how well it does in theaters, because it's certainly bright colored and big and explosive and fun. And that's what people want. I don't think as much pressure's on it as it was on Tenet, because Tenet was so exclusively in theaters and it was sort of the one that everybody was testing. And I think that also Wonder Woman is probably a little bit more of a crowd pleaser than Tenet, whereas Tenet's not as accessible. It's not as popcorn, bubblegum, exciting mainstream as Wonder Woman. Certainly the first Wonder Woman was, and it looks like this one as well. And I think that's what we needed, then, more something that thinks it's cerebral but really isn't, but preaches to the audience that it is, which is what Tenet kind of was anyways. So yeah, Wonder Woman 1984, I'll be enjoying it this weekend, and I'll talk about it again next week. But yeah, this is, I'm definitely looking forward to it, but I can't give a rating for it because I haven't seen it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film, which is News of the World. Tom Hanks stars as a man who travels in the Old West to read the news from town to town, suddenly put in charge of taking a kidnapped girl to her family.
Says your name is Johanna Leonberger. Indians took you when they attacked your family 6 years prior. Your mother, father, and sister were... well, they passed. She's got family down in Castroville.
Captain, why are you doing this?
She needs to laugh and dream. She needs new memories.
The first thing that I noticed, beyond the fact that he's also a captain in this movie, I mean, he was Captain Phillips. He was the captain of the Greyhound destroyer. He was a captain, Sully Sullenberg. Every movie now, he's got to be a captain. I'm pretty sure he was a captain in that FedEx movie as well. He was probably a captain in Bosom Buddies and Monsters and Mazes back in the 80s. But in this one, he is teaming up with Paul Greengrass. Now, Paul Greengrass is a fantastic director. He's directed some beautiful movies. But he's so known as that handheld guy. You know, if you remember, he did Captain Phillips. He did United 93. And he did some of the Bourne movies, which are very frenetic and very handheld and very visceral. And the way you shoot a Western is very different than that. Westerns are big, wide shots, gorgeous landscapes, vistas, slow pans, slow movements. And he follows those rules very much so. And to the point, they have these gorgeous, just beautiful high-def drone shots of the American West. And that's the first thing I noticed about this movie, about how restrained and marked it was for Paul Greengrass's work. But of course, beyond that is Tom Hanks' brilliant acting. I mean, he's pretty much great in everything he does. I mean, he could play in the worst movie ever, and even the worst movie, he would come out really good because he's just such a good actor. And in this one, he doesn't have the big Oscar moment. And that shows to me he's also very generous of an actor. He does not need to grandstand as an actor. You know, see some movies, like I remember I talked about Hillbilly Elegy a couple weeks ago. That movie, everybody had a big scene. I mean, it was just so clear they were doing, this is your Oscar moment. This is the clip they're going to use in the Academy Awards. I don't think Tom Hanks is aiming for, he's won his Oscars. He doesn't need to win more Oscars. I mean, that's, I mean, I'm sure he'd be okay with it. He's going to be nominated again. But this is not a defining moment in his career. And so he's just doing some really good movies and he's good at doing them. And one of the things this movie does is it shows the reality of the Old West, how brutal it was, how unappealing some people were. And just because you were wearing a cowboy hat doesn't mean you're a good guy. And it shows the conflicted view of the Native Americans, because in this film, this girl's family was killed by the Native Americans. They were killed by the Indians of the region. But then they adopted her, which was not uncommon. And that puts it in a very conflicting moment, because on one hand, they killed the family. On the other hand, they're her only parents she remembers. And how she was raised for several years, you can't discount that. And you can't just drop her back into normal white European society and expect things to go well. And of course, back then, there was no social services. There weren't even really public schools outside of the small towns. And that's, I think, what this shows is how vulnerable this girl is. Whether you leave her in the wilderness, whether you give her to the Indians, or whether you give her to the white settlers, it's not a good world for her. Because there's a certain level of morality that was, let's just say, optional in the Old West. And this movie is a fascinating look at also the fleeting life of fame, because here he was, he's basically a newscaster, and it shows that just because you're out there doesn't mean you're making tons of money, doesn't mean you're super famous, doesn't mean that you have any real power. And people who read the news are just average people like the rest of us. And for all the animosity that's been going on about news lately, you know, fake news and getting mad at newscasts. I know a woman who does newscasting in Pennsylvania, and she's like, I'm getting threats on social media for just reporting. She's reading it off a teleprompter, and she's getting people attacking her for it. And it shows that this kind of crap was going on for years. And I think it's a great way for people to grow personally and watch this film. But it's a beautifully done film. It's gorgeous looking. It's very measured and tempered, and I enjoyed it a lot. I think it's fantastic. So it's in theaters right now, and it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Soul and Promising Young Woman. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. Let's talk about one that's gone to streaming, and that is Soul. A middle school music teacher who has always dreamed of becoming a jazz musician suffers an untimely death and tries to travel back to Earth with the help of a soul that's not ready for a body.
I'm Joe. I teach middle school band. Got it. Go for it. Today started out as the best day of my life.
Back here tonight, first show's at 7.
Yes! Woohoo!
You know what that's gonna say? Joe Gardner! I did it! I got the gig!
Must have been sudden for you.
There I am! What are we waiting for?
Wait!
This is the Pixar movie. It was supposed to come out this summer, and then it got moved to like November, and then it got announced that it's going to move and drop immediately on Disney Plus for no extra charge Christmas Day. And that's sort of Disney's gift to you. They're not taking it the Mulan route. I think Disney is still trying to figure out what it can charge. And depending on how well the reopening of theaters does, they may figure out a way to do that with Black Widow. They may also give an online at-home option for Black Widow in addition to theaters, but make it a premium price. So you got to pay either way. And I think that might appease theaters a little bit. But I mean, this whole business of, you know, we're not putting everything in theaters again. That's not going to be the way it is. Disney is going to be putting a lot of stuff on demand, a lot of stuff on Disney Plus. Now it's Pixar, and Pixar's always completely out of the box and different, but there's something special about this movie. It's directed and written by Pete Docter, and he is known for doing Inside Out. And I remember when Inside Out came out, I said, this is the kind of movie that only Pixar could do. Because if anyone else would have pitched this and asked for $150 million to develop it as an animated film, no one would have gone with it. They would have been like, what, are you insane? We're doing a movie that's all taking place inside this little girl's head? That makes no sense. And in a way, Soul is that kind of movie. It is very out of the box. Now, I mean, it's the story of the music teacher who wants to be a jazz musician. That's a very normal story, and it's charming and cute. But it doesn't reach that level of Pixar amazement until the character dies. And that's another thing Pixar and Disney does really well. They love to kill off their characters within the first act. And it's not just a psycho moment, you know, with Alfred Hitchcock. But when he finally goes to the afterlife and he starts experiencing this afterworld, we'll say, where there are the souls going up to heaven, but he wants to get back down to earth and finish his life. It becomes very much out of the box. It becomes very much like Inside Out, where it is unique and innovative and different. And it's unlike any other movie you've seen. Even the movies you've seen, people getting killed and going to the afterlife and interacting in purgatory or heaven or limbo or wherever. It's not like any of those. And the whole bit of the story that's so hard to explain is there are all these souls that have not gone down to earth yet. And they're just not ready. They need to have a certain badges, basically. And this one's just missing its badge, the bright spot, the sort of the reason for living. And they haven't sent it down, and they've had mentors for this soul for thousands and thousands of years, and the soul's played by Tina Fey. But it looks like a little kid. That's who he ends up tagging along with trying to get back to Earth. And that's when it gets really heady. But, like, heady the way that Inside Out is. It's just out of the box, and it's different, and it's innovative. And it's beautiful, too. I mean, it's a gorgeously animated movie. And weirdly enough, like all the stuff that happens in the afterlife, that looks cool and all, but where it really looks gorgeous is some contemplative moments on Earth. There's a scene where he's like looking at a leaf and the sun's coming through the trees. And I mean, it's your brain doesn't even recognize it as being animated. And Pixar has gotten so good at that, but they still have that essence of soul, no pun intended, in their stories. And that's what makes this movie work, is the fact that it's allowed to work so far outside of the box, and it's allowed to play around with the themes that it did with Inside Out, and it doesn't dumb it down for you, and it doesn't bang it into your head, and it doesn't overly explain it to you. And that's what's so great about this and other Pixar movies. So if you've got Disney Plus, watch it with your family. It makes a great Christmas time viewing. Even though it's not a Christmas movie, it has that Christmas feel to it, in the sense that it warms your heart. So I'm going to say Soul totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. And let's take a little bit of a turn to a darker path and talk about Promising Young Woman. A woman pretends to be a vulnerable victim in the bars only to exact revenge on the male predators who take her home.
Every week, I go to a club. I act like I'm too drunk to stand. And every week, a nice guy comes over to see if I'm okay.
You okay?
You are so pretty. I am a nice guy.
Are you?
I thought we had a connection.
Okay. How old am I? What are my hobbies? What's my name?
This was supposed to come out, I think, like in April. And what's funny is when I saw the trailers for it, I'm like, oh, this doesn't look very good. There's, you know, kind of post Me Too movement. there are a lot of these girl power movies. And I talked a couple weeks ago about Black Christmas, the remake from 2019, and how that became too much of a girl power movie. It became absurd. It didn't just let the final girl control the narrative. There's a scene in that movie where it's almost like in the Avengers Endgame where they go, oh, I can't beat them. And then the women all show up. We'll take them, blip, blip, blip. And they throw all the females from the series in there. And you're like, well, that's a little heavy handed. And that's sort of the scene they have in Black Christmas. So that's what I was worrying about Promising Young Woman. I'm like, oh God, this is going to be just sort of like a poorly done post Me Too movie. And it is a post Me Too movie, but one of the things that's brilliant about it is it approaches it like an exploitation film from the 70s. I mean, there are a ton of these movies from the 70s where it's like the girl trying to, you know, like Knock Knock. You remember that movie with Keanu Reeves? That was a remake of sort of the predatory movies. And they had a lot of those in the 70s and late 60s that played in grindhouse cinemas. And that's sort of the approach this makes it look like. It starts that way, but it has something to say, and it does it unapologetically. And really the focus on Promising Young Woman is not just about the Me Too movement, but more about rape culture and in particular how that works on a college campus. And that's absolutely true. I mean, how many times have we seen in the news somebody get accused of rape and they're like, oh, but you're going to ruin his life. It's like, well, if he did rape this person, we should investigate. And we have these stories of schools sort of pushing things under the rug or rushing explanations or, you know, the hostile witnesses. I mean, stuff like that. And it does show how dangerous it can be for a young woman on campus and how it shouldn't be, but also how some of this behavior is excused all the way through the rest of these people's lives. And that's an important thing to examine. And I think that that's something that does need to be looked at. And I think what this movie does is it shows it as something that there's no easy explanation for. And that's the biggest thing that it drives home, is that ugly things happen and you can point them out and reveal them all you want, but that does not mean that people are going to get their comeuppance. That does not mean that people are going to be sorry, or it doesn't even mean people are going to acknowledge when they've done something wrong. The amount of excusing behavior as, oh, it's just boys being boys, is sickening in a lot of ways. And I think that that's an important thing to put in a movie. Now, this is rated R. You know, I mean, it comes out Christmas Day, but I wouldn't go take the family to this one. But I think it's an important movie, and it does it in such a way that it doesn't necessarily preach at you. I never felt like I was being preached or beat over the head with the message. It was presented there, and it may not be subtle all the time, but it's not subtle in the way that an exploitation film isn't subtle. You know, if you're strong enough to go see this movie and you have enough faith in yourself and you know, haven't been involved in any of these shenanigans. And in fact, if you have been involved in these shenanigans, even if you don't think you've been involved in these shenanigans, it's worth checking this thing out and holding a mirror up to yourself. So I'm going to have to say Promising Young Woman totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Midnight Sky and the Home Cinema Roundup with a look at what to watch and where to watch it for last-minute Christmas movies.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus.
And welcome back to the big fat Christmas episode of Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about The Midnight Sky. A man is left on Earth after a cataclysm to try to contact a spaceship returning from a scouting trip to another world.
We're not receiving anything.
That puts our last contact with Mission Control at
3 weeks.
Why is it so quiet?
That's Ether. It's a spaceship that we hoped would be our future. I have to warn them about the conditions on Earth. There is an antenna that's stronger than ours. We get to that antenna, they'll hear us.
This dropped on Netflix on Wednesday, so 2 days before Christmas, and it's been available in theaters, I think in limited runs. You could probably have seen it since mid-December. It's directed by George Clooney. That's important to note for me personally, because George Clooney, as much as critics tend to like him, is certainly like his characters and his portrayal, he does not do well with critics when it comes to directing. His first movie, Good Night and Good Luck, that did well. But his other directing ventures have gotten mediocre to subpar reviews. And what's funny about that is I tend to like his stuff. I wouldn't consider myself a huge George Clooney fan as an actor. But for some reason, the movies that he's directed, I tend to like more than your average critic. I thought The Monument Men was fun. That movie he did, Suburbicon, a couple years ago, a lot of people just really railed on that because it was heavy-handed. But for some reason, I can recognize all the faults that other critics are saying, that his pacing is often very wonky. He sometimes is a little bit preachy. Maybe hasn't massaged it out quite right. Things don't quite fit together. But for some reason, those don't bother me. In the hands of another director, I might be completely annoyed with these movies. But for some reason, I watch the George Clooney movies and I really like him. Somehow his style gels with me. So I'll be the first to admit I will look over a lot of his faux pas. You know, same thing with like M. Night Shyamalan. There are people who just absolutely hate M. Night Shyamalan. And yeah, he's done some real crap like that After Earth or The Last Airbender. But you know, his would-be Twilight Zone horror stories, I think, are kind of fun. And so I'll be much more forgiving of his stuff. And I say that because don't just say, oh, Kevin said this was a great movie. Keep in mind, it's got all the clunkiness of a George Clooney directed film. But I kind of liked it. The story is about some sort of ecosystem cataclysm. They don't explain exactly what it is. And that's good because that's where it can get preachy because they're pointing fingers and everybody can easily dismiss it and be like, all right, a bunch of socialists who want the Green New Deal or whatever like that. And really, it's just saying something's happened on Earth. And they've sent this mission to this previously undiscovered moon of Jupiter that looks like it might be a place that you could do a colony. And they've sent a scouting team there and they're coming back. But something's happened to the Earth and the polar regions are the only places that can sustain any life. And even then, it's just freezing cold and it's terrible. And George Clooney is basically alone in this Arctic outpost. And he's trying to contact this spaceship and he finds himself with this girl who's left behind, this like 7-year-old girl. And it's his relationship with her and him suffering through being essentially the last man on Earth, even though he's not there. People like in bunkers around the world, but they only can sustain life for so long. And his mission is to talk to the spaceship coming back to basically say, just go set up shop. Don't even land. So it has this level of nihilism. It has this level of depression and existential dread. But I found that interesting because I found there was a realness to that. And it's weird because the isolated thing, which you would think would be isolated, is being on the spaceship. But that's where humanity is left. And that's the last hope. And that's where people who actually have some vibrancy, whereas he's like riddled with cancer and staying home because he's going to die anyways. It'll leave you with mixed feelings, I guarantee you. And it's not a normal movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a little bit challenging, but I thought it just made some interesting choices. And I enjoyed watching it. I wouldn't say it was fulfilling, but it was certainly an interesting contemplation. So I'm going to have to say The Midnight Sky kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time for the home cinema roundup. Instead of just rattling off a bunch of new releases because you guys got gift cards burning a hole in your pocket, let's talk about what's available now. You know, a lot of people this time of year, they watch Christmas movies, and a lot of people maybe don't have the time to watch Christmas movies because they're working a second job or trying to make ends meet. But now we've got Christmas weekend. What can we watch as a family and enjoy? Now, if you just go through the main streaming services, like Netflix is known for doing more recent stuff, but you can find some classics on there. You can find White Christmas is on Netflix. That's been on there for a while. If you can manage watching the live action version of The Grinch, that's on there as well. The coolest stuff from Netflix, I think, are the Christmas Chronicle movies, the one with Kurt Russell. Those two are both obviously on Netflix. And Klaus from last year was a great animated film that Netflix put out. Now, they've learned that those Hallmark Christmas movies, you know, about the advertising executive female who's bitter and doesn't want a man living in the big city, moves back to a small town and then falls in love with a guy with a dog. Those kind of movies are very, very popular. And so they've got all those movies on Netflix as well. Every streaming service has a list of those. You're going to have to wade through those if you want to get to the Christmas movies. Now, Amazon has a nice little breakout of holiday films, but the big one to note on Amazon Prime is if you're a fan of It's a Wonderful Life, the original with Jimmy Stewart, they have that streaming on Amazon Prime, so you don't have to find a way to get the DVD to work. Hulu is best for TV because Hulu archives a lot of TV shows. And what they do is if you go to their holiday section, you can find all their classic TV shows. You can do like iconic TV classics, like stuff from Bob's Burgers or, you know, they have a Festivus episode for Seinfeld, which is called The Strike. You know, if you didn't watch it already on the 23rd, which is the date of Festivus, you can watch it again. It's the classic Christmas episode. So that's a great place to mine old TV shows. Now, for some of the other streaming services, Apple TV, what's best Christmas time watching for that is the Charlie Brown Christmas special. All those Peanuts holiday specials, I believe, are available from Apple TV Plus for free. You don't need to sign up, but you need to get the app on your Roku or whatever, and then you can watch those and enjoy those as a family. They also have this Mariah Carey special on Apple TV. The one that's really interesting, though, is Disney. Disney has a lot of stuff, and you wouldn't necessarily realize it because you don't think of Disney as a Christmas outlet, but they've got stuff like the Muppet Christmas Carol and the Santa Claus movies and the Nightmare Before Christmas and the Narnia movies, which at least the first one is marginally a Christmas movie, but they also have the Fox stuff. All the stuff that they got in that Fox merger last year. So that means they've got Home Alone, the whole Home Alone series. You've got Miracle on 34th Street, the original, on there as well. And if I was asked recently what my favorite version of the Christmas Carol was, and as much as I found it interesting how authentic to the original book the Jim Carrey mocap version was, to me it's also on Disney, and that is Mickey's Christmas Carol, which I love. It's only a half hour long, and it's a cute little cartoon. It's totally worth watching with the family. If you're trying to find the original Grinch, I believe if you've got a cable account and you get TNT, if you have your cable TV subscription information, you can get that on the TNT app online, so you can watch that whenever you want to. And then finally, if there's something that has really been a kind of a favorite in our homes, and it's the strangest thing to talk about, but it really is a nice thing to have at Christmas, those fireplace logs. The videos, Netflix has like three of them. They're called Fireplace in Your Home. And there's a couple that play music. There's some that's just a crackling fire. And you turn on the TV, turn off all the lights, keep the Christmas tree on. And it's really kind of warm and inviting. If you don't have a fireplace and you don't want to set fire to your house, there are some options. And Tubi has a couple of those. Tubi TV, which is free, has those fireplace logs on there. Do keep in mind it'll go to an ad, which is annoying now and then. Same thing with Pluto TV. They have a fireplace log channel. And of course, you do have to deal with ads there. But those are some ideas if you want to watch something this weekend and enjoy the Christmas and holiday time with your family and the safety of your own home and the warmth of your own fake fireplace fire on Netflix. There are your options. And that's it for this week. I need to go. And that's it for this year, because next time I come back, it's going to be 2021. And so I bid you all farewell. Have a great holiday season. Merry Christmas. And until next time, have a fat time at the movies or at home.